everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another NFL offseason is upon us as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 44. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Sal Capaccio, the Bills beat reporter who does a great job breaking down the All-22 for WGR 550 in Buffalo. Sal and I are going to talk about Jim Schwartz and his defensive scheme and what he saw from the Bills defense during his time up north back in 2014. Next up, we've got Two Technique, where Eagles offensive lineman Dennis Kelly and I talk about the difference between gap scheme and zone scheme run blocking up front for the offensive line. And then we'll close it all out looking through my notes on Eagles defensive lineman Taylor Hart and Saturday Scouting. We're going to talk about Schwartz's scheme and Chalk Talk. Well, where does Hart fit into that scheme? I'll take a look back at my notes on him coming out of Oregon, and we can hash all of that out. But before we get into all that, it's time to welcome in my favorite guy in the room, the man with a plan, Brian Thomas. What's up, BT?
Doing well.
A very interesting Super Bowl, a defensive matchup. I know you always love the big defensive battles. How did you spend your time watching the Super Bowl?
Watched the game with a couple friends and wasn't surprised. I figured it would happen that way. I thought Denver's defense would really do a good job in terms of collapsing on Cam. And I knew it was going to come down to what both teams would do on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very interesting game, and like I kind of expected it the same way that you did. I kind of saw that coming to fruition, especially with Wade Phillips having 2 weeks to prepare. Certainly, it was a great win for the Broncos. And then, obviously, some Eagles news. Monday, we're recording this early Tuesday morning. Monday afternoon, the Eagles announced that they have released wide receiver Riley Cooper. A decision that it's not all that surprising. Obviously, the production wasn't there over the course of the past two seasons. It didn't match necessarily the compensation that he was getting. So how does this impact the rest of the receiving core? You know, where does Jordan Matthews fit in this receiving core? Is he going to play inside? Is he going to play outside? The same could be said for Josh Huff. Is he going to be a slot receiver? Is he going to be a do-everything offensive weapon type player that can line up in the slot, outside, in the backfield? I'll be very, very intrigued to see how this receiving core comes together over the course of the next few months. Will they dip into free agency? Will they dip into the draft again? Very, very intrigued to see it now, because look, for all the production that Riley Cooper didn't have, there was a lot of reps that he took on the outside. So somebody's going to have to step in and play there. So that's going to be very, very interesting to watch. But let's get this show started. I'm very, very excited to get to my first guest. He does a great job covering the Bills from an All-22 perspective. I talked about him earlier. Let's talk to Sal Capaccio in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Very happy to be joined by Sal Capaccio. He does a great job covering the Bills for WGR 550 in Buffalo. And if you don't follow him on Twitter like I do, it's at Sal Sports. You can go on there and check out some great All-22 content he's done. Go back and check out some of the stuff he wrote about Jim Schwartz's defense back in 2014. And Sal, I appreciate the time this morning to talk about Schwartz and the job he did in Buffalo. And I really want to get into this scheme from a position-by-position standpoint. But first, can we just talk about what you think the mission statement would be for Jim Schwartz as it pertains to the Eagles defense in 2015? What can Eagles fans expect here? I know that he's talked with the media a couple different times, but from your exposure to him, what would you say the mission statement would be for this defensive scheme?
I think the mission statement would be to pressure the quarterback by using the front four as much as possible. You know, don't have to commit a lot of guys up front. If you can get that pressure, he'd love to do that with his front four guys. That's what he did in Buffalo. And then let the linebackers kind of do what they do in space out there while those offensive linemen are tied up. I think that's what he'd like to do. You know, the numbers, the sack numbers for the Bills were off the charts. You know, they broke record. They broke a record when he was in Buffalo and led the NFL in sacks. You know, he had some really good players, but I think, you know, he mainly did it with just those front four guys, and I think that's what he would like to do.
From a creativity standpoint, what do you think is the most, I would say, interesting facet of this defensive scheme? Do you think that they do some things creatively up front? Is it creative stuff on the back end? Or is it more of just an execution defense, almost like what we've seen in Seattle the past couple of years, where, look, we're going to do what we do, now you just have to stop it?
Yeah, I think that's mostly the case. And really, to be honest with you, I think it's really that, and you guys know this in Philly, because you had this happened there before, the wide nine. You know, I think that's really what he likes to employ is the wide nine. And I know that it doesn't always work given the certain personnel that you have, but he had personnel last year in Jerry Hughes and Mario Williams where he would put them out in that wide nine technique and he would allow them to go. And I didn't really think that was going to be a really good situation for this team. I did not like that particular defense going into last season or 2014, but it worked. It worked well because the Bills, what they really had that most teams don't have, is they had two really good defensive tackles in Marcel Darius and Kyle Williams, and they even rotated in guys like Corbin Bryant and Stephen Charles, who could start on many teams in this league. So you could put those other two guys, Williams and Hughes, on those wide nine techniques, and you could have them a little bit wider because those other guys up front are going to be able to wreak so much havoc anyway that really they're going to get a lot of one-on-ones on the outside. I think that's really the hallmark of the defense is how he attacks from the wide nine, but you got to have guys who are able to do it or you can really put yourself in some bad situations.
So, Sal, one of the big things I wanted to do with you today was really kind of pick your brain about what Jim Schwartz likes in terms of attributes and characteristics and traits from all three levels of the defense. So we'll just start with the defensive line. If you could just start real on the outside, what does he see from your exposure to him? What does he want from those defensive ends in the 4-3? What exactly is he looking for on the outside?
Yeah, he's really looking for pressure from the outside, a wide nine technique. You know, you can still have a, you can still set the edge, if you will, but you look at really Manny Lawson is the best edge setter on the Bills. I'll use it as an example. He kind of disappeared in Jim Schwartz's system. He was really good this year in Rex Ryan's system. He was really good 2 years ago before that in Mike Pettine's system, which is similar to Rex's. But in Schwartz, he wasn't. And that's because really that position, that defensive end position, is more about getting to the quarterback, wide nine, getting out there and just attacking. Now, you can use other ways and guys to set the edge, but really – in the defense now, comparing, I'm just comparing what the Bills did before Schwartz and now with Rex Ryan, you want those guys maybe to be a little bit more disciplined on the edge, maybe sacrifice a sack number or two to make sure that they have contained, make sure that they push things inside. So I think he's going to want to be aggressive, Jim Schwartz will, on the edges with the defensive line. And then up front, again, it goes back to those defensive tackles. If you have guys who are really good, you know, Marcel Darius and Kyle Williams are two of the better ones in the league, really. The Bills have a very good defensive line. And those guys are able to penetrate and they're able to play two gap if you want them to. I think Schwartz would rather have those guys attacking, though. I think what he wants to do is all four guys up front attacking because he wants to maximize pressure on the quarterback without using the linebackers.
So there's two really interesting takeaways from what you just said. First, I'll start with the Manny Lawson. And obviously, one of the players that Eagles fans are very, very intrigued to see what his role is here in 2016 is Connor Barwin, who has been a very steady producer over the course of the last three seasons here in Philadelphia, both as a pass rusher and as a run defender. He dropped in coverage at times as an outside linebacker in this 3-4 scheme. Now transitioning to a 4-3, he has said he feels like he's a defensive end in a similar situation to Lawson, and I know Lawson has spent some time standing up in certain teams wherever he's been around the league. Do you think that that could be a similar type transition now that from what you saw in Manny Lawson in Buffalo?
Yeah, I think so. Possibly, you know, like I said, though, the only problem is, you know, in Jim Schwartz's system, Manny Lawson disappeared. He really wasn't a guy that was on the field a lot. That was Jerry Hughes' role. So he's going to use if Connor Barwin, if people think that Connor Barwin can be strictly a really good pass rusher, then he'll be on the field a lot and he'll be doing that. But if Connor Barwin's strength mostly is as an edge setter and really making sure that he can keep contained and things like that, I don't know how much of a place there'd be for him on that Philadelphia defense on a down-to-down basis. Manny Lawson was really good under Pettine and really good under Ryan. But under Joe Schwartz, Manny Lawson disappeared, and they went more in favor of a guy like Jerry Hughes, who's really good, by the way, and I understand, but in that defense, Jerry Hughes, defensive end, put his hand on the ground and just get to the quarterback. So I think it really kind of you have to decide which one you want Connor Barwin to be, because it seems to me, at least, the way Schwartz ran his defense in Buffalo, he didn't have a guy do both. You know, that's the Manny Lawson type. He had one or the other. He either said, you're going to the quarterback or you're going to be a stand-up linebacker playing the run.
That's going to be very, very interesting to watch. And a lot of Barwin, and Eagles fans will know this, a lot of Barwin's production over the course of the past three seasons was in those nickel sub packages where he had his hand in the dirt and he was lined up out wide and he could just get after the passer. Maybe it wasn't necessarily from a bend the edge and turn the corner and win with speed off the edge, but going from speed to power and winning with leverage and those kinds of things. That'll be very, very interesting to see Connor Barwin in that kind of role. You talked about the defensive line and what they can do up front, inside especially. You had Darius and Kyle Williams up there in Buffalo. We've got Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan, who I think are two of some of the best in the league at their respective positions. So I'll be very interested to see how successful those two players are. At the linebacker level, What are the traits? What does Jim Schwartz want from the linebacker position? Does he want guys that can stack and shed at the point of attack, or is he more of a free flow? He wants those guys to be athletic and play sideline to sideline.
He would rather have guys play sideline to sideline. He'd rather have guys at the linebacker spot not have to commit to a pass rush necessarily. Now, there will be times where he blitzes, but he doesn't blitz a ton compared to a lot of guys in the league because he'd rather get that pressure, as I said, from the front four. But you look at what the Bills did a couple of years ago at the linebacker spot. I mean, they're two leading tacklers, Preston Brown and Nigel Bradham, guys that were the heart of that 4-3 defense from the linebacker spot. You're talking about a Mike linebacker and a Will and a Sam linebacker. Brandon Spikes played a lot of the Mike. He was right in the middle a lot, but he wasn't a three-down guy. And I think that's also something you have to look at. Are they going to have a true middle linebacker who can be a three-down guy? The Bills didn't have that with Jim Schwartz. They had Brandon Spikes, who was a two-down guy, and then he would come off the field on third down, or he'd stay if they played zone. And that's another thing, and I know we'll get into this, but he's not afraid to play zone, so those linebackers have to be able to cover a little bit. They have to drop. They have to get to their curl zones and be able to be athletic. So he prefers athletic linebackers, especially from the Mike and the Will. From the Sam and the Will, excuse me. But he also wants a Mike linebacker who's just really going to plug up the middle of that defense, stand in there, get to the hole, and be able to make tackles. That's the hallmark of just getting those front four to rush forward. Because once you get those front four to rush forward, now you're creating some seams and some spaces where those linebackers have to step up and fill the spaces. So he wants tough guys who can run downhill at linebacker, but and the two edge linebackers in your 4-3, so your Will and your Sam, guys who can also get out in space, go sideline to sideline, and also play zone defense.
Yeah, I'll be very, very interested to see how the linebackers on this team, you're talking about Jordan Hicks and Michael Kendricks and Kiko Alonso, a player that I know that you guys up in Buffalo really got to see Kiko at his peak. He did not have a great season by any stretch here in Philadelphia this year, obviously mostly having to do with injuries. For Eagles fans that want to know and want to see what Kiko Alonso can be for this defense, I know you didn't see him there under Jim Schwartz, but tell us what Kiko was like his rookie season when he was healthy up there in Buffalo.
Super athletic, very good instincts. You guys have seen the athleticism. I remember, I think, week one, that interception he had on Monday Night Football. He's a super athletic dude, and he can really go sideline to sideline. He has a lot of great instincts to make plays on the ball, to make plays going to the ball. I think he fits really well. If you're going to run a 4-3, I think he fits best at the Will linebacker spot because that's really where you can use your athleticism the most to go sideline to sideline. If you put him right in the middle as a Mike linebacker in a 4-3, I think that's a little tough on him because now he has to attack downhill all the time, and he can be good at that, but he's not the biggest guy in the world, and I don't think you want to use him in that role necessarily all the time. So I think his best fit in a 4-3 would be as a Will so he could move around a lot. But he's a very athletic guy. He's very instinctual. I think really you have to wonder, though, where is he after the knee surgery? Last year I know he took a step back. I know part of that was, the injuries. He had another injury last year. I know that maybe scheme was a part of it. So I think really if you're going to put him in that Will spot, he's going to be a three-down guy. And by the way, he can be a three-down guy because he is so athletic. I think you have to know and make sure that he is, his conditioning is good enough, he's over the injury well enough, and he'll be able to withstand that for 16 games.
Sal, how excited were you guys in Buffalo when Jim Schwartz got there? Were you really excited to see him at that Will linebacker spot in that scheme before the injury? I mean, I know that you guys didn't get to see him, but were you excited about his fit there in that role?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I was actually I was on the air the night that it broke that he was going to miss the entire 2014 season. And I remember being on the air and all of a sudden, right after I got off, that happened. And I just started thinking to myself, wow, what are they going to do? Well, luckily, the Bills got lucky. They drafted Preston Brown that year, and no one really knew how good Preston Brown was going to be. And he stepped up and did really well, and he led the team in tackles his rookie year, and he was able to fit into that linebacker spot. But also they went out and they signed Brandon Spikes, which really mitigated that as well. So they were able to move Preston to where I think, you would say Kiko would play. They put him at the Will linebacker spot, which would have been Kiko's spot. They had Brandon Spikes play in the middle. So the Bills didn't lose too much as far as that's concerned because those guys stepped up. But I do wonder what would the defense have looked like if they would have had Kiko play the Will and they would have had Preston Brown be able to play the Mike linebacker spot as a three-down guy, which he can be, because I think that would have helped that defense even more so than they already had at the linebacker spot.
Sal, let's transition to the secondary. And before we get into the specific traits of the corners and the safeties and what Jim Schwartz wants on the back end, let's talk schematics and X's and O's. What does he want to do from a strategic standpoint? Is he more a man team, man scheme, or more zone? What does he want those guys to be able to be doing on the back end? Obviously, everybody employs a little bit of both, but primarily man, primarily zone. What have you seen from Schwartz in Buffalo?
I've seen them both, actually. No, he kind of mixed it up depending on down and distance. I don't really think that there was anything you would say. I mean, he likes to play man-to-man. I think most teams in this league like to play man-to-man. But the Bills did play some zone last year. I think the biggest criticism that came from Schwartz with the secondary last year, where the Bills have some very physical corners. They have especially Stephon Gilmore. And I think a lot of people felt that he wasn't up and in the face and pressing enough. He was backed off, even in man-to-man defense. So he did play zone defense. He did play man-to-man. I think it really depends on maybe what he has at the linebacker spot and what he can do underneath as well. But that was the only criticism I do remember as far as the secondary was guys like, you know, Stephon Gilmore not getting up and pressing as much as a guy like he should be because he's a physical corner. He backed off his corners a little bit too much and it wound up hurting them in some cases with teams just went right off the line with some short passes, some bubble screens, and things like that. And those receivers had room to get out. So I think that was the biggest criticism for him. But he didn't have the one go-to calling card as far as man-to-man or zone defense. He mixed it up. He did, you know, depending on down and distance. Like I said, I think Brandon Spikes was a really good gauge to know because I knew if it was third down and Brandon Spikes was on the field, you know, a third and not one, if it was a third down and Brandon Spikes was on the field, I know they're playing zone defense because he's not going to cover anybody, you know, man-to-man. He wasn't that kind of linebacker. And I remember thinking a few times that that was the case. So therefore, you know, they were playing just as much so many times as man-to-man, but I think you could expect mostly man-to-man, and then when you get into the longer situations, he would play zone.
Sal, last question for you. The safety position. What does Jim Schwartz want from the safety spot? Does he want two very, and everybody wants interchangeable players, but in terms of the how they were employed, do those safeties need to be interchangeable, or can it be more of a free and strong situation with someone who plays primarily down in the box and someone that plays deep?
Totally interchangeable. The Bills the last few years, whether it's been under Rex Ryan, under Jim Schwartz, you know, I think this is the trend in the league, to be quite honest with you. But really, I had a lot of conversations with Bills secondary players and Donnie Henderson, who has been their secondary coach for the last couple of years, even under Jim Schwartz and under Rex Ryan, that you know, they said those guys are interchangeable. They can play strong. They can play free. There is no true strong. There is no true free. So what he really wants in an ideal situation is you want, you know, two safeties who can do both. You want two safeties who can come up in the box, who can go back and cover. And, you know, the Bills have had that a little bit because especially when Aaron Williams is on the field, but he had an injury last year and he was off. But the year before that, under Jim Schwartz, you know, he did a nice job in that role. But he definitely wants to have guys who can do both, the guys that he can move around. Because the way the calls are on the field, the way offenses now will line up, and especially how offenses go to quick pace and you can't sub, you're going to need safeties who can do various things in the back end. So he's going to want to have guys not necessarily true, not necessarily strong or free, but two guys who can do both. And they don't have to be great at both, but they got to be good at both.
Well, great stuff, Sal. I appreciate the time here. Thanks again for joining us on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We will talk to you very soon.
All right, no problem. Thanks for getting in touch with me.
Great stuff from Sal. And again, you can follow him on Twitter at Sal Sports. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. Give me a follow if you like what you're hearing on this podcast. I tweet out the links to this show and all the other podcasts I'm a part of, the Eagle Eye in the Sky column, and a whole lot more. So be sure to go out, check that out. You know, I really appreciate everybody that gives the podcast love and promotes it on social media. But before we get to the rest of the show, BT, I haven't asked you for a few weeks. Now, what can people do to best support the podcast on iTunes? We haven't really gotten into any new comments lately because we've been on the road. What have you seen from iTunes?
So he finally got some comments. I know we've been away for the last couple weeks, but BHan01 said he loves the show. It gives him the opportunity to dive deeper into football and really learn what's going on from a coaching and analytical standpoint. He just wishes it was longer. It's kind of a great comment by him because he loves the work we do. One question he has for us is what podcast do we listen to from an X and O standpoint that we enjoy that we kind of pull things away from?
You know, from an X and O standpoint, you know, I really, really appreciate the opinion of Daniel Jeremiah, the former Eagles scout, who does a great job for NFL Network. So the Move the Sticks podcast, I think, is great. I really enjoy listening to people that have very specific opinions and like their own processes. So I really enjoy listening to Matt Waldman in the RSP whenever I can. I think he does a great job with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio podcast. And it's really kind of a Google Plus hangout. He does a really great job on YouTube. I really appreciate listening to some of the guys at Pro Football Focus. And, you know, even though I don't always agree with their numbers and some of their grades, I appreciate the process, and it's always interesting to hear who are some of the players they talk about, especially from a college football and NFL draft perspective. It's very, very interesting. So and always, you know, Doug Farrar does a great job with Greg Cosell. Ross Tucker is obviously he does a great job in all of his podcasts, including the College Draft podcast, which he and I co-host together. So there's a lot of great podcasts out there. I appreciate you listening to this one, and also the Eagles Insider podcast, the Journey to the Draft podcast here, and the Eagles Live podcast with Dave Spadaro, which has now been added into our podcasting programming over the course of this offseason. But again, love hearing from everybody out there. And again, the best way to support this podcast is to go on wherever you listen, leave us a comment, and rate the show. It's the best way to kind of boost it up in the rankings, and also give us some feedback on what we can make better, what you really appreciate from the show, and what you maybe don't like. It's always great to hear from everybody out there. But all right, let's keep this show going. I know a lot of fans out there are asking questions about what this Eagles running game is going to look like. You know, what will the changes be? Will it be a zone scheme? Will it be a power gap scheme? Well, I had a great conversation with Dennis Kelly about the difference between those two schemes. Let's get to that conversation in Two Technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Here now with Eagles offensive lineman Dennis Kelly. And Dennis, you've had the opportunity to play now in two schemes that have, you know, zone run principles and gap scheme principles. What are the biggest differences for an offensive lineman when you're talking about those different kinds of schemes?
You know, I'd say probably when it comes to zone scheming, there's a little bit more flexibility. You know, when it comes down to zone, you kind of just, in a simple way of saying is you go to, you know, if it's a run right, go to your right. If someone's there, hit them. Whereas gap scheming, it's a little bit more defined. It's a little bit more detailed. Not saying zone scheme isn't, you know, detailed. There's not little things to it, but when you kind of break it down, I'd say that's probably the biggest difference is zone. You can really just teach it as step right and hit the first guy that shows up.
Which one requires, I guess, more in terms of the mental processing end of it, where you have to kind of see things as they come and react that way? Is it more the zone scheme?
Yeah, probably with the way you said it, it makes a lot of sense saying, you know, when if you are, again, using the right, going right kind of term or example, is if you go right and someone's not there, you have to be prepared for someone not to be there and keep going up, whereas if someone kind of falls into your zone, you got to pick them up. So the reaction aspect of zone offense is definitely underrated.
Great stuff there from Dennis. He did a great job breaking down the difference between the zone scheme and gap scheme blocking. So now I'm going to quickly break down how to subscribe to a podcast. If you're listening to this on the Eagles app or on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and you like what you hear, it's really easy. All you have to do, just go to your phone, go to your local podcast app. Every single smartphone has it. Or if you're on your iPad or your tablet, wherever it is that you're listening, you just go to your podcast app, search for Eagle Eye in the Sky, hit subscribe, and it gets downloaded to your device each and every week, and you can listen whenever, however you want, listen in the car, at work. I know BT listens to it when he's folding laundry and doing chores around the house. You walk the dog. I listen to podcasts when I'm walking my dog at night. There's a ton of great podcasts out there. We already hit on it thanks to the question from BHan01. Really, it's just the way of the future, and I really appreciate listening to podcasts. So if you like what you do every week, you know, you can just go on, you hit subscribe, and it gets down to your device each and every week. So let's wrap this show up like we do every week. Let's talk some college football with Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, so one of the players that I think is really, really intriguing as far as the transition into the new scheme is Taylor Hart. There was a fourth-round pick out at Oregon a couple years ago. Was a perfect fit in a 3-4. And I really, really liked Hart. And you're going to see why. I'm going to read you my notes in a minute. But I really liked Hart, and I'm really, really intrigued to see how he fits into this new scheme.
Everyone's wondering now with the 4-3 and going back to a wide nine, what are some of the skill sets that you think that he brings that can fit into the scheme?
Exactly. So that's something that we'll kind of dive into. And I wanted to go back and look, what did I write about Hart coming out of Oregon back in 2014? And, you know, I'll start off, he lined up as a D-end in a 3-4 scheme, mostly as a four-eye technique. So to get away from that, the four-eye technique means that he's directly head up on the offensive tackle as opposed to a 5 technique, which is slightly shaded outside. So basically the same idea, 3-4 defensive end, you're lined up over the tackle, but with the 4-eye, you are head up, whereas a 5 technique, you're shaded slightly outside. So Hart was 6'0", 6'1", so just over 6 foot, 281 pounds, lines up in a bullfrog stance, so both hands in the ground in a 4-point stance, gets out of his stance really quickly, and he has strong hands at the point of attack, a natural 2-gapper that can get into blocks quickly with proper hand placement, lock out, find the ball, and shed to make the play. A very sound team run defender that understands leverage and can set the edge, and a very reliable tackler. So I really, really liked his ability to defend the run. And I talked about understanding leverage and how to set the edge. A lot of times he was used as a force player on the outside where he was located, he was scraping out to the outside and he was forcing the action back inside to his help. And I thought he did a really good job of maintaining his gap integrity, defending a lot of those perimeter runs, and then also using his hands really well at the point of attack. So I thought he had a lot of value in the run game. You know, I thought he had a high motor. He was very relentless, gave relentless effort going to the ball, closed well from the backside. He was very fluid and surprisingly athletic given his size. For 281 pounds, I was high on his athleticism. And he even dropped into coverage at times at Oregon, which you wouldn't have expected for a guy that size. While he does have that deceptive athleticism and he moves well for a guy his size, he likely is not going to be a dynamic third down disruptor consistently at the NFL level as an interior pass rusher. He does not have an explosive first step, and he will need to further develop his pass rush repertoire. At this stage, he's not a power player. He will need to get stronger in the lower half, as he did get pushed off the ball at times in the run game. His pad level is inconsistent, and he will need to be coached up at that facet in the next level. Overall, he'll probably never be a star player or a dynamic pass rusher, but he will be a key cog on a team's defensive line as a reliable run defender and high-effort player. I feel good about what Hart's role is moving forward, both in this scheme right now under Jim Schwartz, and also I thought that he was really coming into his own in that exact role under Bill Davis and Jerry Azzanaro in that scheme that we had seen over the past couple of years here in Philadelphia. I think that he offers some versatility, and you know, we talked with Sal earlier and how Jim Schwartz values that length up front. I think that Hart provides that. I think it'll be very, very interesting. I think he's a guy that can provide some of that versatility inside and outside.
I mean, you need to have depth. The biggest thing in the NFL is not about how good your players are, it's how deep can you go. And the biggest thing is watching that Broncos defensive line is they were just ushering guys in and out. Antonio Smith, Malik Jackson. I mean, those guys were constantly creating pressure in the middle of the field and not allowing guys to get out. So I think if you just have a constant pass rush, not just from one side to the other side or just the edges, having guys who can come in and create who can create pass rush up the middle can be helpful, obviously.
Yeah, and I think that Taylor Hart, again, I don't think he's going to be that consistent pass rushing threat. But like you said, the ability to be able to rotate him in and out. Can he play DN? Can he play some 3 technique? Can he play some nose tackle in a 4-3? You know, he'll be able to be used up and down the line of scrimmage. I think that he offers some versatility in that way. But again, he's not going to be a consistent. He's not going to be Fletcher Cox or Benny Logan and how disruptive they are against the quarterback. But as far as defending the run and being able to control at the point of attack and be a good team run defender, I really, really liked Hart coming out of Oregon to fit that kind of a role. So excited about Taylor Hart moving forward and how he fits in this defensive line. But let's wrap the show up. Thank you again to Sal Capaccio, to Dennis Kelly, and all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the chance again, the best way to support the show, go on, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, and shoot me a question. I want to hear from everybody out there and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go on, leave us a comment, and we can keep making this show better each and every week. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.